Hey, Dee, did you read my blog post this morning?
I did, and I won't be eating any of those apples.
What?
People will just need to go read your blog post to find out why. I don't want to give away the surprise.
That's right. So I'm going to go ahead and get us started. Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Tell me how your garden grows. My goodness, there are paragraphs. Okay, go.
Well, we should note that we are recording this on Monday, April the 1st. So it's been 9 days, not 7, since we last recorded.
Right.
So I mowed for the first time out front. Actually, I've mowed a second time out front. Of course, I trimmed real nice, just like on those videos we watch on YouTube and Instagram. Uh-huh. Got the patio all set up for Easter. It looked marvelous. Went to the greenhouse and bought these oddball pansies that just sort of showed up in this one flat that was mostly blue, but then these ones that came up were a little bit different. I went and got those.
Anyway. Yeah, she did. You did a pansy rescue. You wrote about it on your blog.
Oh, that's right. I did. That was so long ago. I forgot I wrote about that. Anyway, I started the peppers and tomatoes inside. Tomatoes are already coming up. I sowed seeds outside for lettuce, radishes, kale, spinach. I just checked this morning, my little peas that I sowed 2 weeks ago are peeking out, so they're jumping out.
Yep.
And I did host the World's Greatest Family Easter Egg Hunt on Saturday, late afternoon. Best weather day of March. We couldn't have asked for better weather. And anyway, those kids, they remembered last year I paid them for four-leaf clovers. They go in the front door, out the back door, and they are down there looking for four-leaf clovers because, you know, Aunt Carol paid for them.
You started something.
Yeah, but the price has changed this year. I says, I'm only giving you a dollar because I was caught by surprise last year and I didn't think they'd find any. And I offered them $5 and that cost me 10. Anyway, that's pretty much it. How about your week?
Okay, so the day before Easter was beautiful to the max here. Yesterday was nice too. And after I did the cooking, I went out, I spent all afternoon outside working in the garden and I had a blast. I sowed seeds. I moved plants outside into the garden beds. I planted a rose after I dug up another rose and I did a video about shovel pruning, which I posted today and on Instagram. So I'll link to that, but it was such a fun day. And what else have I done in the garden? I mean, I've just been really busy, you know, just working. Working in the garden. But I've got a whole new attitude about the garden this year.
Good.
Which I still haven't shared. So I should probably write that in a blog post, right?
You should. Don't spill the beans here.
Okay, I'll put it in a blog post. So let's
play. I did want to comment. Wait a minute. I wanted to comment. Only a gardener would understand why you would dig up a rose and then plant a rose.
Well, that one rose is really sick. So I shovel pruned it. And that's what my post was about. Because that's a technique that all experienced gardeners know.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's play favorites.
Let's do. Do you want to go first?
I shall go first. So the Lady Jane tulips, which is officially Tulipa Louisiana Lady Jane, I have them in this one flower border and they've multiplied. One of them has even come up in a little crack in the patio, which is how I know they're multiplying because I did not plant a tulip in a crack in a patio. So I think that's wonderful. And you don't see tulips self-sowing like that, but these found a spot they like and they're blooming out there. And I will put a picture of that in the newsletter. That's my favorite.
So I just want to say for Oklahomans, I have tried Lady Jane tulips. They did not multiply here, but they were fun for about 3 seasons. Had them for about 3 years and they did fine. But then they pooped out, which, you know, it's just hot here. I think that's the issue. Okay, so in my garden, It's my all-white daffodils that survived the fire last year. Yesterday was the anniversary of the wildfire that swept through my neighborhood, and it burned up all of the Caria japonica, and it's plenty flora. And plenty flora just means lots of flowers because it's double. And there's a single form too. Anyway, it burned it all the way to the ground. It was a bunch of dead sticks. It has come back with abundance. One of the daffodils came back that got burnt, of the ones that got burned up. So I'm going to plant more there. I've taken a picture, made a note in my, set a reminder on my iPhone to tell me, oh, look, I'm buying more bulbs. Remember how you teased me?
I was not going to say anything after last week when you said, I'm done. I'm sitting here thinking, wonder where she's going to get those bulbs.
You know, you are just so mean to me. And I am so nice to you about your viola obsession. So whatever.
I am the nicest person
no, you are not.
Ever.
No. Anyway. It looks beautiful. The bulbs look beautiful in front of it. I'll try to take one from the side, and it just makes me happy. That's my favorite.
Yeah. And you know what? This time of year, it is hard to choose a favorite.
It is, because everything is just beautiful, right? I mean,
yes. Oh my gosh.
We're having a really beautiful spring. So we're going to get rain tonight, maybe. So that's good too.
Yeah. We're having a beautiful spring because everybody's now suddenly posting this little, I guess, memes or phrase, the winter that wasn't, because we had such a mild winter. Mm-hmm. And so all I'm thinking of, the winter was that wasn't, watch out for the bugs, people, because they're going to be everywhere.
The bugs that will
anyway.
Be.
Anyway.
The bugs that will
bugs
be.
That,
which means you should have, exactly. You know, don't put out pesticide because you want the birds to eat those bugs. So
exactly.
There you go. Do us a quote, girl.
Spring won't let me stay in this house any longer. I must get out and breathe the air deeply again. And that is Gustav Mahler. Mahler. M-A-H-L-E-R. I don't know who he is, but that was a quote.
I love his quote, though. So our flower topic is, this flower has to go. Well, good luck on getting rid of it. These are things that we planted that we really wish we had not. So many planted ones.
Yes. So we'll just go back and forth. We'll ping pong on this one.
Cool.
Go ahead.
Okay. For me, the first one is autumn clematis. Do not be fooled by autumn clematis. This is where all these people are going to write in. And it's okay if you write in. Go ahead. We love to chat. Autumn clematis is a menace in my garden. And the only thing that really likes it are the wasps. It stinks and it multiplies like a fiend because those little wasps are good pollinators. So I dig up autumn clematis everywhere, and it's now considered, if it is not invasive in Oklahoma, it is definitely one of those plants of concern. So I hate that plant. All right, next.
Well, I would just like to say about autumn clematis is there is a native one.
Yes.
And there's a way to tell them, but I'm not going to talk about that. I'm just going to say how proud I was when I was in college. We learned that about the autumn clematis is a useful plant, and we learned that it was Clematis maximowicziana. And I was so proud because we had to be able to spell it, and I could. And then they changed the name of it. So it's not that anymore.
It's like tenuflora. Is it tenuflora? Like, and let me just say, tenuflora. Mine is not the native.
No, it wouldn't be. But anyway, so while you look that up.
I will.
So my, ooh, I wish I hadn't planted that, is moneywort, which is Lysimachia. And I'm going to swear that it escaped from a container planting on the patio,
yeah.
Walked across the lawn, got into Plopper's field. And honestly, that is just, I just pull it out by handful after handful after handful. It is just thick in there. And so the other plants don't seem to mind, but I mind. And it is, if you want a ground cover. But it's not a good one.
So
it's not a good one.
I like Creeping Jenny Aria, which is the lime green version of that, the pretty one. Is that
yes.
The one you have, or do you have the plain one?
No, this is just the straight green
okay,
one.
Okay,
Creeping Jenny is the other name.
Yeah, do not grow regular Creeping Jenny because it will take over. Creeping Jenny Aria is not as strong as it are most plants that are either variegated or a lime green version of it. They're just not as strong as the other ones. But in some places, it's extremely invasive too. And by the way, that autumn clematis is Clematis ternaflora. Turnaflora.
Okay.
So it's.
But I'll tell you what, Maximoxiana, that was a proud moment when I learned that word. Maximoxiana.
Well, Lysimachia is pretty good too, now that you mention it. I mean, it's kind of hard to say too. All right. So, the next one everybody knows about, Rudbeckia goldstern, which has got a very long name that I'm not going to do right now. And, you know, if you want to plant it next to an air conditioner, great. Although it's so funny because I said that on one of my Instagram reels and an air conditioner guy said, I don't advise anyone planting anything near their air conditioner. And I just had to laugh and laugh and laugh because it doesn't get that tall and it doesn't block the inflow. It's just something that I'm saying, if you need a spot that is really uninhabitable, that's the word I want, one that's bad.
Yes.
Then it's perfect for there. It is not perfect for a well-amended happy garden. It will take over.
Yeah, I have some in a big area in the back, but it gets enough shade that it's slowly kind of shading it out. So
yeah, it doesn't like shade much. But it'll still bloom in shade with partial shade. So yep. There you go. What's next for you?
Okay, so Vinca Minor, which was once a nice ground cover, but not anymore. That stuff, hard to get rid of. And I'll tell you what, back in my college days, I spent hours and days one summer at a proper ground cover nursery propagating that stuff, taking cuttings and cutting them just a certain way. And oh my gosh, hours, literally hours. But anyway, I planted some this is 26 years ago. I planted some over on the garage side of the house and it slowly creeps around and I pull it back and trying to get rid of it, but I'm never very good at it. And right now, I mean, it's got a lovely little bluish purple flower on it. But
oh, I know it well. I had it too. This nursery sold it to me back when I was a brand new gardener and I did get rid of it. It's considered an invasive plant now by the Nature Conservancy.
Yes.
So I just looked it up just to be sure because I thought it was. They have a great website that we could link to called Plant This, Not That. And it lists many of these that you and I are going to discuss today because a lot of us do this because we don't know any better when we first start, right?
Well, and then, you know, that does bring up the point that we've learned a lot over the last 25 years. And
yes,
when I was in college learning about all these different plants, some that are just very bad, nobody thought this is a horrible thing.
No, they thought they were fine.
Yeah.
And that same nursery, because of that same nursery, they had running bamboo. And now it runs up I-35 between Edmond and Guthrie.
Oh my gosh.
And it has captured, I can't tell you how many acres, right on the east side of I-35. It is amazing to me. I watch it every year. Okay, you ready for my next one?
I am.
Okay, that stupid native heath aster, which I have to make a caveat because natives are not ever considered invasive, but they can be very aggressive in the wrong spot. And my friend Marilyn Stewart was like, Dee, that's like the best butterfly plant for the monarch. And I said, I understand that, but in my garden, it's a problem. It is not a problem in a dry area like my meadow that has poor soil.
Right.
But I planted that 20 years ago and it has marched all the way across my back garden. And I'm going to have to go out there and dig up a bunch of it again. And then the aromatic asters, some of those fit in that same category. They're great plants for the right place. They're not great plants for somewhere that is moist, that has clay. They will take over.
Yeah. And I have asters just pop up all over. And so far, you just pull them out. They're just I'll just call them Asian asters. I don't think they're not native at all.
So I have the smooth aster. Bluebird's one of them, but there's other ones too. And they have reseeded throughout the garden and they're super easy to pull up. So
yes.
Same thing. It's just some things, especially things with rhizotomous stems. And a lot of stuff we've talked about here has rhizotomous roots or rhizotomous stems. And so those can be a real problem in a wetter area. What about you?
So the other thing I wish I hadn't planted, and I plant it because for several minute reasons, but that is the ditch lily, which is a hemorrhoid callus fulva. It's on the garage side of my house. I have a patch and I start off with like one plant, but that patch is probably 7 feet wide and as wide as that border. And it used to remind me of driving down to Southern Indiana for the family reunion, and the ditch lilies would be blooming. And so it looks good for about an hour, and then it just looks terrible. And so it slowly spreads. And the good news is it's competing with vinca. The bad news is it's over there competing with vinca, and someone needs to get out her shovel and just start digging that stuff out and getting rid of it, or at least containing it back sharply. But yeah, I'm not very happy with the person who planted that over there. Oop, that might have been me.
Ditch lilies are beloved by many people, and they and Kwanzo, which is the double version, those both have rhizotomous roots again, or rhizotomous stems, whichever way it goes, and they will march across your garden. And I have Kwanzo in my garden, not because I put it there, because it came in on another daylily I bought.
Ooh.
And it comes in, yes. And so every year I wait for it to bloom. I break off the stem so it can't set any seed, and I immediately dig it out during daylily season. I'll never get rid of it, but I have it. So I hear you. They can be in Missouri, southern Missouri. They have it everywhere in the ditches. And it is a Chinese plant. Yeah. I mean, daylilies are from China. So they can be, I don't know if people consider them invasive yet, but they are definitely aggressive.
Yes. And I will say this to that. The fact that it came in on a daylily, I don't know if you bought that daylily in a pot or bare root, but that's another good reason to bare root your plant. Make sure you're only planting the plant that you bought and not some hitchhiker that came in on the dirt.
It actually was bare root.
Well,
because all daylilies that are sold by individuals are bare root because they rinse off the soil. It was just that root was in with the other root, and there was no way to tell, you know, on the fan. And it came in, and I can't get rid of it. So it's a bad one. Okay, so my last one, I got two more. Garlic chives.
Again, I planted that one time, and I still see clumps of it, and I dig it out.
I dig it out everywhere I see it.
Yeah,
it is so bad, and it tries to take over, and I do not want it to get invasive and spread to my woods, which it will do. And the last one, because you don't have any more. Do you have any more?
Well, I did think of when the garlic chives reminded me that I've planted some allium, and this isn't the millennium one, but the taller ones, and I don't want to say the variety because I don't really know, but those things have self-sown, and I've got little clumps of those stupid onions is what they really amount to now, that allium in this one bed. And it's like
wild onions.
I got to dig all that out. I got a lot of work to
do. We got our work cut out for us, don't we? Okay. My final one is evil. It's so evil. It's Asian honeysuckle. I did not plant this. I'm just going to point out this was from Bill's grandmother's garden, and he planted it before I got here. And I didn't know any better back then. And I have dug that thing out of, I can't tell you how many places on my property, and I've tried to kill it. And yes, I've sprayed it. I've sprayed it to kill it. I've done the thing where you take the jar of weed killer and you cut it way down and you stick the stem down in there because supposedly it sucks it up. The plant sucks it up. That didn't work. I think the only thing that will get rid of it is a bulldozer. And right now it grows on a fence right next to my deck, but it's trying to spread just down the side of my garden. So it's time again to work on it again, because I try very hard not to let it get to seed stage.
Right.
Because I don't want it to get in the woods, because as you've talked about before, it's all over Indiana.
Yep.
And it's all over Tulsa. And my part of my garden is very similar to Tulsa. It's a little hotter and drier, but I have the woods too, and it gets in the woods.
Yeah. And I see seedlings of that coming up in my yard, and I have a neighbor several houses down, and they have an Asian honeysuckle that a previous owner let it grow. And, you know, they have it trimmed like it's a regular shrub. And I'm like, you got to get rid of that. But anyway, the good news about it, as far as digging it out, it's one of the first things to leaf out in the spring. So if you see something that's leafed out, it's probably an Asian honeysuckle. And it's one of the last things to have leaves in the fall. So when you look across the woods and all the trees have dropped and there's still green leaves out there, that's Asian honeysuckle. So it's easy to find it that way and get rid of it.
So I had a client that I saw two clients before I went on Zoom for all my garden coaching clients, and I was walking past their woods. They live out southeast. And I turned and looked, and it was early and it was green in their woods. And then I looked up and it had grown all the way up their trees and was in the top of their trees. And I said, you guys, they're an older couple. And I said, you guys have got to do anything you can to get this out of here. Cause I said, it is just going straight down your hill. And their thought was, well, it's green and it's pretty.
Yeah.
Cause they didn't know.
Yeah.
And I said, this is bad. And they were, and as soon as I showed them going up into the trees, they were like, oh no, they had no idea. So, you know, we all learn this way.
Yes. So let's end on a high note. I'm going to tell you about a plant that is a little bit aggressive, but I've been managed to contain it. And that is the hardy ground orchid, Latilla striata, beautiful little pink flower. I moved a bunch of them over to my pink garden. They still come up in this other bed, but they're big strappy leaves. They're easy to see. I never in my wildest dreams thought that that thing would spread how it did, but I've been able to control it. And it's so pretty that in the right spot, you can manage it.
So at my house, Blatilla just sits there and does nothing. And I've had it for years. It just sits in the same spot. I know other people are going to write in and say, yeah, it's a great little ground cover for them because it's really popular here. I've not heard of it being invasive anywhere though. So cool. Ready for the next quote?
I'm ready for a quote. Oh. Let's talk about vegetable gardening.
You are a beautiful garden, and every time you think low of yourself, you trample that garden. Go gently, show yourself compassion, and let yourself grow. That is by C.L. Drogan.
That is very true. Be kind to yourself.
That's right. Don't trample on yourself. So our vegetables, we aren't going to trample on ourselves, are our highs and lows of vegetable gardening. What are some of your biggest successes and worst disasters, and what did we learn?
So I only wrote disasters, but I'll tell you, my overriding success is that I have a vegetable garden with six lovely raised beds, a couple of compost bins. I have had one my entire adult life, and it is the best thing ever. And no matter what, there's always something that's good coming out of that garden.
I would say that's true of me too. I think I didn't have a vegetable garden until I met Bill. So before that, I gardened flowers and houseplants. And then when I met him, I had all the land in the world. And so I can make a vegetable garden. And I'd say my biggest success is when I started growing things in pots on my driveway and also growing them in raised beds because it changed my life. It made it just so much easier. I mean, I did the in-ground one for years. And that's a young woman's game. I'm just going to say.
That's a farmer's game. Yeah, that's not our game.
And you know what? Every time I meet with a garden coaching client, they always say, where should I put the vegetable garden? And they always kind of point out away from the house. And I'm like, that is because all of our great-great-grandparents or great-grandparents were truck farmers. And so they would have their vegetable garden out away from the house and they would just plant it. And then they would have their other garden, like they would go out to the fields and work, and on their way back in, they would harvest. It made sense for them, right? I'm like, no, put it up by your house and make it attractive. And then they're like, okay, because I said, you won't go out there. If it's way out there, you know, you're going to go to your garden. It's too far.
No.
So that would be our biggest successes. Now we'll talk about our lows real quick. You go first.
So one of my worst disasters last year, now I'm an experienced gardener, Dee. I planted those potato slips with the eyes in those bags. They had a lot of foliage growth and stuff. I went to dig out those potatoes. Not a one. I don't know what
happened. Did
they rot? The plants looked good. No, they didn't rot. They were just, there was.
What the heck?
The only thing I can think of is, I don't know whether the soil was too rich and it was all foliage growth or.
Could be.
But anyway, I didn't get a one, and I am loath to plant potatoes this year. I'm probably just going to buy organic potatoes at the store. Ask me why I buy organic.
I know why, but you go ahead and tell us. Why do you buy organic potatoes?
Well, I've told this story before, but when I was in college, we went on a field trip to a potato farm.
Ugh, yeah.
And they said, first thing we do before we dig all the potatoes is we spray the whole thing down with Roundup and kill the vines. And then they dig them up and they send them through like three different washes, dry them, pop them in the bag, off they go to the store. And I'm thinking, I've eaten my last potato skin.
Okay. And the other thing they do is they put that dust on them it's a retardant to keep them from, you know, germinating.
Yeah, we didn't.
From turning into a. Maybe they didn't do that back then, but they do it now, because if you'll notice, if you buy potatoes that aren't organic, they never, ever sprout. But if you buy organic potatoes, they start to have little eyes and start to sprout on you after a bit in the dark. And that's the potato I want to eat.
I always buy organic on potatoes, if at all possible. And you could usually find them. But anyway, what's your big disaster?
The year of the bad green beans that we had. Remember that one year where... Like two years ago, we couldn't grow a green bean to save our lives. That was terrible.
That was terrible.
Do you have any more?
Yes. So when I went from cedar edge beds to the stone edge that I have now, I had a transition year where I just made like a center aisle and then I had rows going out from it. That's where I got the name Vegetable Garden Cathedral, because it looked like a
tree. Yeah.
Except they weren't raised beds. They were just beds. And there were so many weeds back there. And of course, that's when you all came to see my garden, was when I had the worst looking vegetable garden of my entire life.
Okay. I'm just going to say, listeners, it was beautiful. There were tomatoes falling off the vines. It looked fine, but keep going.
Anyway, so but that next spring, I'm telling you that the henbit, especially then dead nettle, came up with a vengeance. And I thought, well, I'll just do like 3 feet at a time. I'll get control of it. And then it's like, I don't have time for this. And so I hired the guys and they came in and they cleared it all off and they set up all the beds for me. That was when I was working and stuff. But anyway.
That was a really good piece of advice too, because you know what? If a job is too big for you, hire someone to help you.
Yes.
I do, because sometimes I just can't get it all done. So my other one was when I planted tomatoes in the same place for 3 years, I knew better and I got root knot nematodes, which really sucked. And I learned my lesson from that one.
That's when you start growing them in the containers in the bags.
Pots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I can't grow tomatoes in my potager anymore, because I will probably still have root knot nematodes till the end of my life, but maybe not, you know. But now I grow other things in there that are just as good. Like right now there's lettuce in there and spinach. It's the best spinach year ever right now.
Ooh, I hope I hope we do too. The soil, I think, is warmer now this year at this time than it is in previous years. Cause I mean, sometimes it'll take a while before I see peas popping up, but they're popping up. So I'm expecting great things.
I got peas and sweet peas and
I got to plant so much stuff. I got to plant the sweet peas. Don't tell anybody.
Okay, I won't. So then there was the time I tried spacing out my potting soil in the pots with some purchased compost, and it made them retain too much water. And that was a mistake. So they didn't drain well that year. And I learned from that too.
Yeah. So here's to sum it up. Every year, something's not going to go right, but most stuff's going to go right.
Right.
So plant a garden.
Plant a garden. Enjoy. I mean, even if it's just one garden bed, you know, you can buy really good garden beds now online on Amazon and other places, and they're pretty good quality, and you fill them with good stuff and then you grow stuff and it's easy.
Oh, yeah.
Do easy.
Yeah, we're all about that. I'll do a quote and then we'll do book.
Cool.
I kept always two books in my pocket. One to read and one to write in. Robert Louis Stevenson.
Something good to think about.
Yeah.
Like taking notes on your note program and on your phone. I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Walk around the garden and I'll go, you need to plant this here. You need to dig this up. You need to, you know, because I don't remember.
Good point.
Okay. So our bookshelf, we're excited about this book. I know we said that last week too, but we bought this book.
I still am reading the library copy.
I bought it. Okay, so it is Christy Purifoy, I think it's Purifoy. She has done it again. And she has a new book out called Seed Time and Harvest, How Gardens Grow Roots, Connection, Wholeness, and Hope. And so we a while back did one of her other books. She has several. And this one, her other book that we did was Garden Maker, which was an old one. And this one is just as lovely as Garden Maker.
Yeah, I think it's a trilogy of books, and she wrote them all from 2020 forward, so she has been very busy. But as we said, she is an excellent writer. And so the way it's described online is Seed Time and Harvest is a series of lyrical essays exploring the myriad ways that gardening deepens our understanding of the natural world and grows our capacity for care and connection. And indeed, I think that's a very good description.
Oh, I do too. I do too. And like the other ones, it started with a quote before each chapter and then occasionally a quote within other things. But I actually read one of her quotes. So she's talking about, in this book, it's more about rootedness and connectedness through community and also how we all miss Eden, paradise. And so by gardening, we are trying to create our own little paradise, which I've always thought. And I think we need these kinds of books in our lives because there's a lot of how-to books and they're great.
Yep.
But we need memoirs because they are, and, you know, Carol did several memoirs of her garden and they're, and in Carol's case, they're humor.
Yeah.
And in this case, this is connected to faith a lot. And I just think they're beautiful.
Yeah, they're beautiful books, a lot of beautiful pictures. And then I don't want to say this is, there's some how-to in here too. So
there is.
She has different types of gardens. Like here's one, butterfly and plant pears. And she talks about how you would plant different plants for different types of butterflies. And instead of listing plants, she lists the butterfly and then tells you plants that they would be attracted to, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yes. And she talks about gardening for birds. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in this one on page 65, she says, no gardener has total control of her garden. She cannot make it rain. She cannot slow the wind. And if she has set out to feed her family with the produce, then she cannot entirely disinvite the birds from that feast. And so she talks about how birds do sometimes peck your stuff, but they also eat a lot of bugs.
Yes, that is
and
true.
And that's one of the things you want. You want bugs in your garden because bugs attract beautiful birds. And I actually put out a teaser for next week, or it might be for 2 weeks down the line. And it was a question someone asked me on Instagram. She asked me if my bird song was fake.
The one on the podcast?
She didn't mean anything by it.
Oh, the one?
Yeah, on Instagram.
Oh, it's not fake.
On Instagram, because in the background, there are birds. And yeah. She said, did you add that, the birds, or are they real? And I said, no, they're real, which I thought was a good question, an interesting question.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's that music that has bird song. So this is a good book. Birds yeah. are real at Dee's house and at Carol's house.
So there's four parts to the book. The first one is Gardens Grow Roots, and then Gardens Grow Connection. Gardens Grow Wholeness, and Gardens Grow Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very, very good. And so, yes, Carol might be getting herself a copy because this one's going to have to go back to the library because I think there's other people waiting for it.
I bought it.
Yeah, other people are waiting for it. And it's due. When is it? It's probably due this week.
Probably.
Yes, it's due.
You also did a couple of her quotes, I think.
We did those the last time when we did her book.
Yeah.
But anyway, you and nailed I it one of her, when you said this is a great gift for Mother's Day.
Yeah, it'd be a great gift for Mother's Day or for the gardener in your life for her birthday. Or I would say it's more for women than men, although men would like it too. But she writes things from a woman's point of view is all.
Okay. And that is Seed Time and Harvest, How Gardens Grow Roots, Connection, Wholeness, and Hope by Christy Purifoy.
So I'm going to do our next quote, and it's a long one, so buckle in. I don't like either the word hike or the thing. People ought to be saunter in the mountains, not hike. Do you know the origin of the word saunter? It's a beautiful word. Away back in the Middle Ages, people used to go on pilgrimages to the Holy Land. They actually still do. And when people in the villages through which they passed asked where they were going, they would reply, "A la Santerre," which means to the Holy Land. And so they became known as saunterers or saunterers. And now these mountains are our holy land, and we ought to saunter through them reverently, not hike through them. That's by John Muir. I love that quote.
It is very good. So we saunter. We saunter through gardens. We don't hike through woods. We saunter through woods.
I love that. I thought it was too. Beautiful. So our dirt, you found it.
So somebody put a thing on Instagram that lemongrass oil put into a vase, just a few drops with water, would extend the life of the flowers. And the question is that true? I have no idea. But anyway, for our dirt, I found a very nice article actually from Oklahoma State Cooperative Extension about how do you extend the life of flowers in a vase. And this, we'll put a link to it. There are two good things about this. One, they said sugar water. So that is true, a little bit of sugar in the water. But mm-hmm. also, they have list after list after list after list of flowers. And when is the best time to cut them in order to ensure, and this is kind of geared towards market gardeners or people selling them sure. flowers at the market. But when is the best time to cut them to ensure the longest vase life? So we'll include a link to that. That's good dirt and no.
So you also put in here that you often put the words cooperative extension in your searches to get high quality information. And that's a great way to do it.
Yeah. Otherwise,
I often go to Oklahoma State University anytime I want some really good information. Arkansas University has good information too. It might be Arkansas State. And Texas, of course, has really great information too.
And I go to Purdue.
Their land grant ones.
Purdue, Illinois, Michigan State, Ohio State, sometimes Pennsylvania. There's and also we ought to give a shout out to Washington State where Linda Chalker-Scott has some fabulous information.
Which she also puts on the Garden Professor's blog, which is a great place to look. And she also has a group on Facebook that they kind of watch over to make sure nobody goes crazy and puts dumb stuff on there. All right. So then you also put the offline club on here. Do you want to talk about that this week?
Yeah, this popped up on Instagram, ironically. But it's a group in the Netherlands that have phone-free evenings at like local bars and restaurants and stuff. And they started it off and they created this offline club. And basically, you have to sign up. Reservations are hard to get now because it's very popular. But people go and they leave their phones, I guess, at the door or whatever. But they read, they talk, they knit, they paint, they do everything. But nobody is on a phone. And so they just like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, maybe we should start the offline garden club.
That's fun.
And so anyway,
I don't know when we'd have time, though.
Anyway, that was just a very interesting little concept. And we probably all need to have more phone free time.
Don't we, though? There's a new book out and my daughter was reading it and it's called, this is going to be bad if I can't remember it. I'll have to look it up really quickly. It's all about our children and how they need more offline time and how we shouldn't get them phones until later.
Oh,
which
yeah.
You and I already knew. But yeah. He did a big study. He actually was on CBS Saturday morning after Megan already had the book. And it's a fascinating book. And you know what? We'll put it in our newsletter. I will find it.
Very good. I'll do a quote and we'll do the rabbit holes. I enjoy spring more than autumn now. One does, I think, as one gets older. And that is Virginia Woolf.
Yeah, my grandmother used to say that she found autumn kind of sad as she got older. And I can see that. But I still like autumn a lot. So there you go. So our rabbit holes, you want me to do mine first?
Sure.
Mine's red algae. And I won't bore everybody else with red algae, but red algae is the precursor to carrageenan. It is the precursor to many things. It's used a lot in vegan products. In fact, I found some in my face cream today, which is kind of giving me some trouble, even though I washed it off. The point of that is anybody who has alpha-gal syndrome is allergic to red algae, and we're allergic to carrageenan. And the other day, I found out that my vitamins, I did a deep dive because I kept getting sick. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have moved out everything. Well, no, I hadn't, because my calcium had red algae in it. And it wasn't on the bottle. It was on their website. And so I got rid of that calcium and within a day got better. And then this morning I was putting on my moisturizer and I thought to myself, I knew my one moisturizer was fine. I was putting on my other one and I thought, you know, I should look at that. I should look at that. And I did. And it said that it had some sort of an algae in it. So I went and did a deep dive and that algae can come from red algae. I immediately washed it off, but I am having some trouble today. And so I'll have to take an extra antihistamine. So red algae can be a real problem for people with alpha-gal syndrome and other allergies.
But what the real problem is that calcium manufacturer needs to put red algae on their label.
They do. Everybody needs to put it on their label for various things, and they don't. But that particular company argued with me that it really wasn't red algae. And I was like, it says so right on your website. So it is. I've argued with them a lot. But anyway, all right, your turn.
Well, I have three rabbit holes. I'll go through two of them. One of them was Spring in the Little Garden, which is a book by Frances Edge McIlvaine. And we've talked about her before.
Yeah.
Kind of grew up a rich girl in Philadelphia area, and they would go out to their country home in the summertime, and she loved primroses, and they would sell primroses out there. But she really, she was in her 80s when she died. But anyway, so I put her on my Lost Ladies of Garden Writing. And then I also got lost in another Substack that somebody wrote called A Guide to Booklegging: How and Why to Collect, Preserve, and Read the Printed Word. It's a really pretty a long read, and it's written by a husband and wife team, but talked about the importance of having their physical library and how you should really don't feel bad if you have a lot of books in your library, because books are a good thing. And one thing about books that we all know is books are static. And so, you know, not to say that anybody would change the meaning of anything or whatever, but I do have 13 dictionaries in there. So,
wow.
And wow. I don't know. I just.
Oh, you're saying online, that the fact that being online, they can change stuff all the time.
Yes.
And actually, I've seen that happen. I won't call out any names, but there's a certain company that bought another company. They did a stock exchange. And then later on, they erased that from their website. I have a screenshot of it. So, and I'm not calling out the company because it doesn't matter. Nobody likes this company anyway. But, you know, it's one of those things that books are static.
Yes. And so, and you know, we love our books, and obviously I have a lot of old books, but the article again is called A Guide to Booklegging: How and Why to Collect, Preserve, and Read the Printed Word. And we'll put that link to that in case anybody's interested. And needs justification for how many books they have. Because the books
Lord
behind
knows
me,
I have a lot.
The books behind me, that's just like the tip of the proverbial iceberg around here.
Yeah, we have a lot of books. So garden commissions. Are you ready to go to garden commissions?
Yeah, I'll do mine and then you do yours and then the big eclipse update. So it is April. So it is actually, it is very much go time in the garden, although it's kind of looks like it's going to be nasty today. I need to focus on weeding and then do some more weeding. And then that's going to be followed by more weeding. And guess what tune I hum when I weed?
I don't know.
Thistle while you weed. You get the idea. I'm not much of a singer. Yeah. Anyway, thistle while you weed. I also need to plant out or pot up or do something because all my winter sown seedlings are up. And so... Mm-hmm. Some of them, you can tell that I accidentally spilled the whole package in there, like the snapdragons. And I bought those really cheap packages, a lot of seeds in them. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do with 1,000 snapdragon seedlings? Obviously, those are not all going to get planted out and they're tiny. So, but I am very excited because the verbena Bampton that we talked about, and I bought some seeds from Dan Andra. And I looked down in there and those are coming up. I actually sent you a picture on.
I know. I was amazed and happy for you.
So anyway, that's good. I have a bunch of onions I started from seed about a month ago. I need to give them a haircut and then take them outside and start hardening them off. We got a little dip in the weather midweek. And then, not this week, but next week, I have two talks, both on Lost Ladies. I got to finish that talk and get that ready. And so suddenly,
you're busy.
I'm pretty busy. What you got going?
So I have two clients this week, which the Zoom garden coaching is going great.
Good.
I actually like it better because I can follow up with an email. I feel like it's better for the client. It's just good all the way around. And then I'm weeding and I got to dig out that heath aster down in the Lower Dales. So I got to gear up in my permethrin clothing to do that. And because I will be sitting on the ground and the larval ticks apparently are out, I heard. So that's a problem. And let's see, still... I think I've got all my seeds in. I think I've got all those started. So that's good. And I think that's it.
You ready for the eclipse update?
Yes, I'm ready for the eclipse update.
So as we record this on the 1st, the eclipse is 1 week away. And so now the word's coming out like, okay, everybody, you need to gas up your cars and you need to stock up on food and you need to get yourself ready. And it's like, what are they expecting? Well, it turns out they're expecting crowds around here. So they said the restaurants are going to be really full. There's going to be literally tens of thousands of people flooding into this area. And I looked, and Bloomington, which is an hour south where Indiana University is, they said they're expecting 300,000 people because they'll be in more totality than a lot of places. And right. I checked, the population of Bloomington is around 80,000. So if you can imagine four times the number of people coming in, four visitors for every one resident, restaurants, and they said there'll be traffic. And so now they're like, and you know, so some people go like, oh, we need to hunker down. Something bad's going to happen. It's like, no, there's just going to be a lot of people around. That's all.
Right. Same thing in southeastern Oklahoma, because that's where the totality is. And Hochatown is like ground zero. Yes, that's a real place. And that is a tiny place. It is a tiny place. It's part of the Choctaw Nation. And I don't know if they're ready, but you know, whatever.
Well,
they'll figure it out.
South of here in Franklin, they're going to be in more, a little bit more totality than here. And someone was telling me that there's a Hampton Inn that offered minimum four nights, $1,000 a night. Wow. They sold out on almost immediately. So people are flooding in. And down at IU, they're opening up Memorial's, the big football stadium. They're opening up that stadium and going to have something there. And so anyway,
no thanks.
Let us look at the weather forecast and pray for.
Okay.
So right now it's still a little mixed and it says partly cloudy.
I mean, if it's a day like today, we're in trouble because it is cloudy here.
Yes. And so I watched my young weatherman, Ryan Hall, y'all on YouTube. He gives some updates. And anyway, we shall see. But that's the eclipse update.
Cool. So are we ready to wrap this baby up?
We're going to wrap this baby up. Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review that helps us get noticed by others. Could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And subscribe to our Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelus at Substack.com, also linked to in our show notes. If you do, you'll get a link to listen to that podcast a day early.
If you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we're in a small commission and it costs you nothing.
Or you are welcome to set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout or make a one-time donation through PayPal.
Thank you to everyone who has done so. It helps us pay for podcast hosting.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the Garden Gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.